Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all around the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Selogy. Say hi to the good folks, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this episode is going to be for June 4th, 2022, first show of the month. We are getting into summer, although technically, I don't think, when does summer technically supposed to start? I mean, granted, it kind of doesn't matter because it already feels like summer, but isn't there like a official start date that it happens at?
The 22nd.
Yeah, screw that. I say it started when it May switched over to June.
Pretty much, if you've been watching the news, basically, you probably, if you joined us last week, you know that we pretty much took a good chunk of time talking about the shooting that happened in Uvalde at the elementary school when some 18 to 19 young children were murdered by a gentleman with an AR-15 and a shotgun. It wasn't even a week and we had another mass shooting happen in a different state. Now, fortunately, and God, it sounds terrible to say that, but fortunately the victims were not children this time, but it was still just as senseless and just as ugly, frankly. This is all happening at a time when emotions are running super high and, you know, people are, for the first time in a long time, genuinely, asking for real gun reform of some kind. That'll be a subject we'll be talking about a bit this week, but we've also got some other stuff that happened, including some political shenanigans. We've also got some news from the White House, specifically the intern program that they run over there. We also have a infamous lawyer finally going to prison because of being a scuzzy son of a bitch. A blast from the past is coming back in the world of cars. And honestly, I'm kind of happy it is because it's very kind of kitsch now, but it's still a nice car. And we also got a bunch of entertainment news as well, including some stuff about the new Star Wars television series and the fact that Star Wars fans are probably the worst. And, of course, we got a bunch of trailers. But, that's pretty much everything and more we'll be having on this episode of Let's Weekend. We will start off, as we always do, sort of recollecting the things we've been doing over the past few days leading up to today. So, Chris, start us off. What have you been doing this week?
Not too much this week. Just been working and all that. Getting ready for Summer Game Fest to start up here next week.
Yep.
For that stuff. So,
and some stuff's already started leaking. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow on Day Zero.
Yeah, I don't know about any leaks, but we have one event that's already happened so far, so yeah. That'll be fun to talk about. But yeah, weather-wise, not really too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
We had a nice heavy storm that came through on Wednesday night that basically got rid of all the super hot weather.
Yeah,
for a bit, so that was fun, and that was like a severe thunderstorm that came through. It had good, 50 plus mile an hour winds, very heavy rain, all that kind of stuff. Made sure I was not outside for any of that.
Yeah.
Watched some people try to go out into it to get to the cars.
Yeah.
I was like, good luck with that.
Uh huh.
I also heard a couple people be like, I left my windows down. Shit.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, you should have taken care of that, because this thing was a known thing that was happening. So, but yeah, now today it's like, just before I left to come home, it was like in the 60s. That's just a nice change of pace here.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, for stuff I've been watching, finished up this half of the season for Better Call Saul. Some big shit goes down. As you would expect, because, you know, it has to get to the points of, you know, where Breaking Bad would be starting, so you know certain characters and such don't appear. Mm-hmm. Whether they just disappear or die or whatever, that's the big question mark. But yeah, it's I definitely would love to hear about people that's never watched Breaking Bad or just watching this, like what they think is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Or not, who they're going to worry about dying or not,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. But yeah, the show still is really good. Looking forward to the last half of the season that starts about a month from now,
mm-hmm.
in July. So there's that. And I started watching The Floor is Lava season 2 on Netflix. The sort of cheesy game show sort of thing that is a pretty decent time. And this mm-hmm. time around, they have made some changes to the way things work.
Mm-hmm.
First thing is they have changed the way some of the areas are designed so that there are now, you have to go around to get these like exit pass stickers
mm-hmm.
that you put on yourself. So, you know, you have three people. So you kind of require there to be three of those to go get everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of force people to actually explore the whole course.
Mm-hmm.
And they have more puzzle segments in there
mm.
of things like you know, pay attention to things going around. Like the first one, there's this car and it has the button to open up the exit. And it's like, oh, it needs a code.
Mm.
You look around for the code. Luckily, it's pretty simple because it's on the license plate of the car
mm.
kind of thing. But yeah, there's stuff like that around, and some teams find them, some teams don't, and can make things easier or harder depending on how much you pay attention for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, well, after one team is done, they kind of go up to this balcony area above, and they get to sort of watch the other teams go for things and, you know, comment on it or whatever for that, and also kind of worry about, oh, they're going to knock us out of the final round.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the final round is a literal volcano course.
Yep.
That it's kind of like the end of Guts, Nickelodeon Guts, if you remember that show where they had to climb a big mountain. This time it's not quite so daunting of a thing, but mm. it's got the weird lava goo that's oozing over big parts of it, so can make it harder for people to climb up it.
Mm.
That kind of stuff. So, yeah, and it seems like they maybe changed the lava a bit. It seems a bit more gooey mm-hmm. versus being potentially just like colored water.
Mm-hmm.
So when people fall into it and all that, it takes a bit more time for them to kind of sink into it. But they still have the whole thing where people that fall in, you know, the other people have to act like they just died. Falling into real lava or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good bit of cheesy fun to it. So yeah, that seems pretty good so far.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the second episode, the first episode, they brought one of the teams from the previous season that were famously bad. So they got a second chance at it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how that goes, but
mm.
yeah, that's been it for what I've been watching, for what I've been playing. There's Hardspace Shipbreaker.
Uh-huh.
It hit 1.0 a couple of weeks ago. Finally managed to get some time to jump into it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the story stuff is much more present here than I think it was when I was playing it earlier.
Well, I mean, in the like, when it was sort of still in its, like, I guess it's
early
access stage, I mean, most of the plot stuff was more suggested than anything, wasn't it?
I don't know. I played a decent bit of it, but yeah, just, you know, flavor text of different characters talking,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. But I believe with the 1.0, they added the final act to the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they maybe added more stories to it or something. I don't know, because it was pretty upfront that I finished the first act with maybe like four or five vehicles done in it.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So That was a bit of a surprise to see it so quickly progressing like that. But yeah, I put a bit good more time into it, but I haven't gotten to the end of Act 2. But yeah, the whole thing is it's an anti-capitalist game.
Mm-hmm.
Set in the future where your character has sort of gotten a ton of debt, and to sort of get out of it, they agree to work this company in space called Lynx.
Mm-hmm.
That, at least for the parts of it you're working in, is sort of in this shipbreaker program where you take these old derelict ships that they have procured. I don't know if they've been, you know, sold to them like used cars or something, but you're there to kind of pull the pieces apart and toss them into the different areas you have. You have like a furnace for the more simple materials. You have another thing for like your nanocarbon and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have like a barge that is for the expensive electronics and such to throw into there, as well as like fuel tanks and that kind of stuff. But yeah, after a few getting in, gets one of the people in your sort of crew that you talk to, like, sends you a private message and is talking about, like, hey, you know, we got this like secret group here that is potentially going to form a union.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want in on this kind of thing? You don't really get a choice on it.
Yeah.
But then you start getting emails. They're like from unverified senders, that kind of thing. And I'm like, it probably should be a little more discreet than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like news group email kind of stuff that you can go read. That is pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
For what it's talking about. But then the big twist is that corporate finds out about this.
Uh-huh.
There's talk of a union. And so they're like, oh, well, loyal family members, you know, brought this to our attention.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to, you know, send out administrators out to, you know, all the crews out there, and they're going to take a look at what's going on and see what's going on kind of thing. And so you got him there, and he's very much your schluppy kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
That you're dealing with, and some people just take offense to any sort of corporate mangling, you know, corporate kind of intervention kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
That is this kind of thing. And he's very much like, I got a couple screenshots here. I know you don't love a middle manager like me coming in making life hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Then talking about, like,
very typical sort of union, you know, that sort of guilt trip that a lot of those companies try to lay on their employers when union talk starts showing up. Yeah.
Yeah, and he starts talking about cooperation and that kind of stuff.
Cooperate. Like, oh, we're, you know, we're not just a business, we're a family, like that type of crap.
Yeah. And he ends like, you scratch my back and we'll be done here in no time.
Yeah.
That was capiche. Like, did he not know how to spell or pronounce capiche?
Well, I mean, if they've been out in space that long, it's totally possible they didn't.
It's like, I don't know why you would use a word you don't know, but that's why you're a rat, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
A corporate stooge. But yeah, you kind of have him horn in on conversations and such, all that kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's been a fun time still working my way through that part of it. But yeah, been working on down my debt as well, because they put you in a huge debt, like almost like $1.3 billion in debt.
Mm-hmm. And then don't they like add on to it every time you end up dying and they have to like restart you with a new clone body or something?
I believe there is a fee for that. I don't know that it's a huge one. Because a lot of my... when I finish a job with the ship, I've been getting, you know, $10 to $15 million worth of credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of works out now where I'm kind of paying it down But I believe the story doesn't really end with you paying it all off. I think it ends sometime before that, but then you have the option to kind of keep going and paint it down for that kind of stuff. So, yeah, been enjoying that. I'm going to put some more time into it. But let's see. Also been putting more time into Fortnite as the season ended today. I haven't had a chance to play any of that or check out the event since I've been busy with work for that. I did try to get in on the Xbox Cloud stuff to try it out that way, but it seemed like it crashed their servers for that, so I didn't get a chance to get in there. But I look forward to seeing what any of that is doing there. But let's see. Also been playing more Rocket League. Have fun with that as that season ends here in a couple more weeks. So
yeah.
So that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
As far as gaming is concerned, I'm still pretty much doing Danganronpa 2. I'm actually getting pretty close to the end of that. There's basically supposed to be like 6 chapters, and I just wrapped up chapter 4. So there's really only 2 more chapters to go. But yeah, the last one I went into basically took place in a literally like a fun house that was like put in like this abandoned amusement park. And one of the things, like the puzzles about it, was trying to figure out what the actual structure of the fun house is, because the whole building is like, you know, it's completely sealed off. There's no windows. The only way to tell time are these analog clocks that are really easy to mess with. And, there's like one of them, it's called the Strawberry House. The other is called the, very early on, you figure out that it's basically they're both inside of one building, but you don't really figure out until later on, like exactly how they're placed. And it's not really what you would expect it to be at first. It's actually a little bit more complicated than that. That whole story arc was extremely real mind teaser, I will say. But I'm also still playing Tetris Effect, because, you know, it's Tetris Effect. It's good. Great stuff. Once again, I'm still terrible at Tetris. Or at least I'm terrible that I'm not nearly to the level that this game expects me to be. But I'm getting better. But yeah, it's good stuff. Love the game. Book-wise, nothing really new to talk about there. I've been doing some movies as well. In fact, I'm going to kind of talk briefly about one of them in just a moment. Because it has to do with the next subject that we're going to be talking about in my in the next segment. But other than that, mostly just dealing with the summer heat. We actually had it shoot up into the mid-90s this week. It's only June. So, not only is it not only just June, it's June is literally just started. We're literally only 4 days into the month. And, God, I'm kind of worried about how hot it's going to be, this time next month. Because if this is how it's going to start out, it's going to be pretty intense this year, I think. And, Florida just had to deal with their first tropical storm of the season. I mean, granted, it basically wore itself out before it hit landfall. But, we've managed to go a few years now without Georgia getting hit with another tropical storm. And I'm hoping that we manage to keep that record going. The one good thing is if it does happen again, the state's much better equipped this time around to deal with it. Because, that first time around, it took a while to get anything back on. It just completely wrecked the state. But yeah, that's pretty much it. You got anything else you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
No? Alrighty then. Well, in that case, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And like I said, I've been watching some more movies lately, and I mentioned, that one of them kind of ties into what I wanted to talk about very briefly this week. And this week we're going to talk about something that is, you know, considering how many of us at Smashpad are all Japanophiles, something we kind of familiar with, but actually not as familiar as you would think of. So, Chris, you and I are basically the same age, and I think, what age were you when you, like, actually started watching any anime of any sort?
I would say whenever I got the Little Nemo movie.
Ah, yes. That's a classic.
The one that's very freaky for a kid?
Yeah, well, that comic strip was pretty freaky for a kid. But yeah, I know what movie you're talking about. Yeah, so when I was, when me and Chris were kind of growing up and anime sort of got introduced in the U.S., obviously you had stuff like, you know, Speed Racer and Astro Boy, you know, that was kind of like the stuff that got introduced that, you know, our parents probably got introduced to when they were younger. But, for us, you know, coming of age in the 90s and the early 2000s, if it wasn't, like, you know, stuff you'd watch on TV, like, you know, Pokemon or Dragon Ball or Sailor Moon or something like that, it was usually stuff, like, that was a bit more harder-edged and tended to be... It was back in the days when they didn't call it anime over here in the United States. They called it Japanimation. Is that a term you remember ever hearing, Chris?
No, I think it was all just animation.
Yeah.
Cartoons.
Yeah, back in the old days when they were when you had like companies like Manga Corp or whatever who started bringing anime over here to the US on like VHS tapes, you know, if you just, you know, just if you want an idea of like how far back we're going here, you would, you know, it was called Japanimation, and it would usually be like have a logo with like a rising sun on there somewhere because, you know, Japan and everything. And pretty much all the anime that we got introduced to, if it wasn't, you know, of the, like, giant robot variety, it was usually stuff like, you know, Akira, or Ghost in the Shell, or, you know, Bubblegum Crisis, or Evangelion, you know, stuff like that. Stuff that was very much in a kind of... very much genre-specific, and that genre specifically was cyberpunk. The Japanese really took to the concept of cyberpunk. Cyberpunk pretty much came into existence in that country right around the same time it started coming into existence in our country. You know, over in the U.S., you know, we had guys like, you know, William Gibson with Neuromancer, and we had movies like Blade Runner and, you know, stuff like that. But cyberpunk actually came out of something different in Japan. It still always had a sci-fi edge to it, but it didn't come out of like the genre literature world. Cyberpunk in Japan actually came out from the actual punk subculture in a very unusual way. So, you know, just like, you know, in the rest of the world, when punk rock started to become a thing, punk started to become, you know, a thing that started popping up in the late 70s in Japan. And the thing about the punk sort of culture in Japan is it wasn't just embraced by the music. It was embraced by several different cultural fronts, one of them being movies. And there's basically two guys that you can thank for this. One of them is a guy named Sogo Ishii, who was a Japanese filmmaker who sort of really got into sort of the punk ethos and the punk culture after he'd sort of spent a few years working for a company called Mikatsu. And Mikatsu was a movie studio that was known for making pink films. And for those of you who don't really know what a pink film is, they were like super common back in the 60s and 70s. They were a very large part of Japan's movie business. Basically, it was softcore porn of just about like every variety you could think of. And this made up like a good 40 to 50% of all the Japanese films that came out during that era. Because, you know, remember, you know, it took Japan a good 20 years after World War II to really get back on its feet. And so it took a while for the, you know, their various cultural industries, especially their movie industries, to reform. And Nikatsu was part of that. And because of that, it didn't just mean that they were necessarily just did pink films, although that was a huge part of their, you know, their output. They were also a major exponent of, like, indie films, especially of the exploitation variety. And Sōgō Ishii ended up getting noticed by this company because of a short film he put out called Panic High School. So, late 70s roll around, and suddenly, you know, the punk rock scene takes off, and there's just a huge explosion of punk bands that show up all over Japan. And so Sōgō Ishii decides he wants to make a movie that would sort of bring about the sort of, yeah, sort of like emphasize and sort of explore the punk ethos, but he wanted to do it through a kind of sort of post-apocalyptic sci-fi lens. So what he ended up doing is he ended up directing a film that came out in 1982 called Burst City, which was basically a sort of quasi-plotless action movie about a gang of quasi-mutant busters who basically go around this sort of bombed out city protesting against a nuclear reactor plant getting built. And the movie was famous because it starred just a bunch of punk bands that were around during that era. Bands like The Roosters, The Rockers, Inu. There was this one band called Stalin that was around that time that are considered like one of the officiators of the hardcore punk genre. And, you know, this wasn't the only film of this type he actually did. He made other movies like Crazy Thunder Road that were pretty similar. He also did a movie called Run, which was a 30... it wasn't called Run, it was called Shuffle. That was a 30-minute short that he, you know, was played in, like, art house cinemas. That was fairly similar kind of ideas, you know, bombed out, post-apocalyptic, punk rock music, stuff like that. The other guy that is responsible for creating it is a man by the name of Shinya Tsukamoto. And Shinya Tsukamoto was actually an actor who turned into a filmmaker later on. He actually got his start in the early 70s, you know, working in like Super 8 type of art housey type movies. And then in the mid to late 80s, he sort of started taking part in these type of really sort of underground sort of art house festivals where he decided that he wanted to make these really kind of subversive, very disturbing types of movies where he was the actor, director, writer, and producer. And normally with a lot of people, if you have, you know, unless you're like Orson Welles, you take all those types of things together, you're not going to do terribly well. He did really well this time, and he ended up being incredibly influential. The movie he put out was a movie that came out in 1989. It was a 60mm black and white art house movie called Tetsuo the Iron Man. This is one of those movies I watched recently, and it's really good, but it is very disturbing. I will not lie. It's essentially like a Cronenberg-style body horror-type movie where this guy ends up getting stabbed by this weird dude with a piece of metal. And as he goes about his week, he starts noticing that he starts, like, growing these industrial parts all over his movie. Like, he starts growing, like, you know, industrial wiring and ducts and pipes and stuff just growing and spilling out of him. He starts looking like he's a walking junkyard. And part of what makes this movie so disturbing is the fact that the effects, which even for today, look very realistic. Back then, they were downright horrifying. It's legitimately pretty terrifying. When this movie came out, it got a bunch of huge, like, you know, really positive reviews from a bunch of different critics. One of the guys from the New York Times called it, you know, just a very surreal, almost like a nightmare that you watch. And, you know, with all that stuff, you're thinking, okay, so where does the anime stuff come in? Because, you know, you're talking about all this stuff, but this is, like, linked entirely with, like, the punk subculture. Well, I mentioned Sogo Ishii earlier. Sogo Ishii, one of the first film projects he put out before he started going headlong into stuff like Burst City. I talked about a movie he did just a moment ago called Shuffle. Shuffle was actually a film that was based on a manga that was written and drawn by none other than Katsuhiro Otomo, the gentleman who created Akira. And that pretty much was the first example of the cyberpunk genre coming out of the movie world, of the punk world, you know, merging itself with the anime and with the anime and manga world, because Otomo would begin work on the Akira manga in 1982. And of course, 6 years later, he would have the film version that would come out. Because of the huge impact of his work, you started seeing a bunch of other artists like, say, Masamune Nishiro, the guy who created Appleseed and Ghost in the Shell, who started sort of taking Otomo's art style, the sort of realism that he approached to, like, technical details, like machinery and everything. But then he would sort of take the kind of cartoony character design that, you know, artists like Rumiko Takahashi would do, and he started adding that to his character designs, and that basically helped inspire just a bunch of the stuff that would come afterward. Like I mentioned, you know, Ghost in the Shell, also stuff like Dominion Tank Police and Genocyber and all the, like, really hyper-violent late 80s, early 90s anime that you may remember coming out around this time period. A lot of it was heavily inspired by this particular era. And it's just so weird where, compared to, you know, the type of cyberpunk that we got over in the US, where it was almost entirely inspired by genre literature, in Japan, it literally arose sort of grassroots out of the punk rock culture. And there's just something really unique about that that just seems, at the one hand, just really cool and also just really Japanese at the same time. That has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, moving on from there, we are going to go on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is the gentleman who went into a hospital in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and shot several people, killing 5, including, I believe, a doctor, I believe was one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it was 4 innocents. One was his doctor, I believe.
Yeah, and I believe the sort of excuse, or at least what it's ascertained, is that the doctor he was, if it wasn't that doctor, it was a doctor he was looking for that he blamed for the sort of chronic pain that he was dealing with, I guess.
His back pain, I believe.
Yeah.
That he had had stuff done to try to help with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, ended up killing 4 people.
Uh-huh.
As well as he died.
Yeah. I can tell you, my grandmother suffers from something similar. She's got, like, bone spurs in her backbone and her, like, her hip and everything, and it's no joke, man. Like, you know, she had to have like one of those radio sort of things inserted into her back that could, you know, vibrator things inserted into her back so she could control the pain, you know. Not fun.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all that to justify what he did, but, like, I understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like he shot himself after shooting up the hospital.
Yeah.
Others were injured, but I don't see any numbers here. for what that was. But
yeah.
Yeah, this was the 233rd mass shooting of the year.
Yeah, this was literally just a week. Actually, it might have been like under a week since the one that happened in Uvalde.
This was Friday or Thursday, and the Uvalde one was like Tuesday, Monday?
Yeah, so it was within the same week, wasn't it?
No.
No.
It was a week and a half later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, still, that's still a very short amount of time.
Yeah, there were other shootings, too, which
yeah,
we just can't cover all of them because that's too much bleakness to talk about.
Yeah.
There's one in Iowa with two women getting shot outside of a church.
Mm-hmm.
There's one at a funeral. There's one at a hospital here in Dayton that got overshadowed by the Tulsa hospital shooting.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the awful part of all this is they're coming at such a rate it's hard to cover them properly.
Yeah.
So we're averaging more than one a day.
But
one and a half a day.
Yeah. So I think everybody knows the Uvalde thing came like 2 weeks after the shooting in Buffalo, and that actually kind of leads us into our next story. Actually, before we get to that story, though, something about the shooter at Tulsa. He actually, the gun that he used wasn't even a gun that he owned. He had actually purchased it earlier that day specifically for this.
He had complained multiple times about pain following back surgery. Saw additional treatment in the days prior to the attack. He was released from hospital on May 24th. Edward, the shooter, called multiple times complaining about pain and seeking additional treatment. On Tuesday, the doctor saw the shooter for more treatment. Called him on Wednesday, seeking additional care and complaining about pain in his back. Then at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, the gunman purchased an AR-15 style rifle from a local gun shop. Also purchased a semi-automatic handgun on May 29th from a pawn shop. Yeah, about a week before. So that's kind of scary stuff. Seems like there should be a more comprehensive background check that takes maybe a few weeks or a month to go through, just a waiting period.
Yeah.
So that
there's the Brady Bill. I mean, isn't there supposed to be a waiting period when you purchase a handgun anyway?
I'm going to bet that states have ways to get around it.
That's possible.
And it's like, you need to have a waiting
period. There's like a 3-day waiting period. But, yeah, I guess, in Oklahoma, they have probably ways getting around it, I guess.
Yeah, and it's like, you need more waiting period because people that are in the heat of the moment kind of things.
Yeah, that's why there's a 3-day waiting period, because it gives you time to cool off if there is
something.
And it's like, you know, you might decide, all right, yeah, I got better things to do. But that's kind of why the waiting period is supposed to be there.
Yeah, I don't know if there's more details on, you know, did he buy this from a shop?
Or like a gun show, or possible he could have just purchased it from a relative or something.
Yeah, it says he purchased an AR-15 style rifle from a local gun shop.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean it's like on the up and up.
Yeah, I mean, it could have, yeah. But we'll probably have more info coming in later. Because there's some gaps in the story here.
Yeah.
But moving on from there, yeah, so, like, this happened about a week and a half after Uvalde. Uvalde itself happened a couple weeks after the mass shooting that happened in Buffalo at that supermarket. And as for that individual, they were indicted this week on domestic terrorism charges and 10 counts of first-degree murder.
Yep. That guy is probably going away for the rest of his life.
Yeah, probably without possibility of parole. Generally, for those who don't know, life sentences in the United States, when you get a life sentence, it's typically around 50 years, essentially. That's why people tend to get multiple life sentences. And But yeah, he'll he will probably drone into the clank for the rest of his life.
Yeah, he has 25 count indictment, which includes the domestic terrorism charge motivated by hate, 10 counts of first degree murder, as well as other charges of murder and attempted murder as a hate crime and weapons possession.
Mm-hmm.
He'd previously been charged with first degree murder in the shooting,
mm-hmm.
Which also injured 3 people. He pleaded not guilty on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's still more to go for that. So
yeah. He's not really... the best thing he's going to be able to do is to make sure he doesn't get the death penalty. Because he let his motive be known to everybody out there. Like, he, you know, his whole manifesto and everything was put out there. He can't argue otherwise. The whole thing is there for anyone to see.
Yeah, but does New York have that?
I don't know.
They seem like a state that may have done away with that.
Let me see. Does New York have the death penalty? They do not have a death penalty anymore. But he is probably going to Rikers for a long, long time. But, yeah. So, yeah. We'll be seeing what will be happening to him when he goes to trial. Next up, we got some shenanigans out of the state of Michigan. Recently a bunch of... Because, like everybody says, you know, we got the midterms coming up in a few months. And so a bunch of, some governorships are up for electing this year. One of them is Michigan. And turned out a bunch of Republican candidates for governor have been blocked from primary ballots because of a campaign of just rampant signature fraud.
Yeah, this is a whole wild thing.
Oh, yeah.
let's see, I think 5 GOP candidates have been blocked from it, including some of their top hopefuls. But, yeah, the 5 candidates said they were unaware of any problems with their signatures, and most are likely to pursue legal avenues to get on the August 2nd ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of thrown things into chaos over there. April 19th was the deadline for Michigan candidates for various offices to submit their filing paperwork with the Secretary of State to appear on the primary. And for running for governor, you had to submit a minimum of 15,000 signatures and a maximum of 30,000. That way, so if there are issues with signatures, you know, them being sloppy, unreadable, or anything like that, you have a cushion for that.
Yeah.
They deal with that stuff. The Republican field for governor initially had 10 candidates. Mm-hmm. Voters can only sign for 1 campaign's nominating petition. Like in past cycles, campaigns have adapted by using a mix of volunteer and paid petition circulators or signature gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
And so within 7 days of the filing deadline, a board of state canvassers or a county clerk can receive challenges to nominating petitions. And yeah, let's see... the Michigan Democratic Party targeted 3 of the Republicans running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Businessman Johnson, former Detroit Police Chief James Craig, and businesswoman Tudor Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats allege evidence of rampant signature fraud in nominating petitions for Craig and Johnson. They also argued that Dixon's campaign had signature fraud and her forms list an incorrect date.
Mm-hmm.
The Board of State Canvassers agreed to evaluate the candidacy challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Ahead of that, on May 23rd, State Bureau of Elections published a report that claimed that 36 individual paid circulators faked thousands of signatures to take advantage of a payout that reaches as high as $20 per signature on average.
Mm-hmm.
So just faking this shit just because they would get paid mm-hmm. more. There's some good stuff to see there. Especially because, remember, the 2020 election, this was a thing that the GOP alleged that, you know, the Democrats did to cheat mm-hmm. and win the election, just harvesting ballots and signatures and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, their accusations are basically admission that they've done something like this.
Mm-hmm.
The issues included accusations of a practice known as round robin. Round robining, Mm-hmm. That's when circulators take turns signing a petition with names from a list, sometimes switching pen colors. Other times, circulators allegedly turned in similar signature sheets for multiple campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
The signature gatherers had worked across several campaigns. State Attorney General's office is looking to possibly pressing charges against them.
Yeah.
So good job.
Mm.
And yeah, the Bureau of Elections report noted, it does not have reason to believe that any specific candidate or campaigns were aware of the activities of fraudulent petition circulators.
Mm.
But after throwing out sheets of signatures from the circulators, the Bureau found many candidates fell below the required threshold to run for office.
Mm.
And so yeah, the Michigan State Police Captain Michael Brown ended his campaign rather than associate his candidacy with signature fraud. I think Dixon survived her challenges, but Craig and Johnson did not. So yeah, it's kind of a whole thing there. And yeah, that's kind of some wild stuff to see.
Mm-hmm.
And the DeVos family, I guess, is going with Tudor Dixon as their recommendation for governor. And so that'll be plenty of money there from them.
Mm.
So yeah, that's going to be a fun a whole thing. I guess is Whitmer going for the Democrat side?
Mm-hmm.
The incumbent, so
yeah.
There you go, after Republicans complaining about her for the past few years.
Yeah.
They get a chance and they've shit themselves spectacularly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of shitty stuff, in Ohio, there's a bill that's going to be voted on, and about midway through the process, the GOP decided to tack a transgender sports ban amendment onto it just so they can somehow manage to get it passed.
Yeah, so this whole thing is... just petty. Shows you the depravity of this whole group here.
Yeah, and petty.
So yeah, they passed this in the State House at 11:15 p.m. Wednesday night.
Yeah.
The original bill was supposed to be about teachers' residency program, trying to reduce state control in schools.
Mm-hmm.
That ended up getting a surprise addition of the Save Women's Sports Act, or House Bill 61.
Yeah.
That wasn't on the schedule for any sort of debate or anything, but at the last minute, Republicans added the language to a completely different bill.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the people in the local, you know, news places around here tried to just get the language of what the hell this bill is, because it didn't go through any sort of committee stuff or anything. So it's like, what the hell is this thing that they're trying to pass? And they eventually managed to get it. But yeah, they, let's see, where's this? Now it essentially allows people to challenge others. And this focuses on women. So you would essentially be able to require, if you're accusing these female athletes of being trans, they would have to get external and internal genitalia evaluation, testosterone level check, and genetic makeup test.
God, it's
as well.
Very invasive, as you'll notice.
Yeah, and obviously people are suggesting, like, well, just start, making accusations just against any, you know, Ohio State athlete kind of thing, like make it as big of a deal as possible.
Yeah.
To get it all thrown out versus the way it would go, which is shitty parents see their kid not doing well and blame it on, you know, a bigger girl or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, she's obviously a man, so have her checked out kind of thing, you know, humiliating these girls and all this. For a thing where I think I saw that in the state of Ohio, there's only been like one trans girl trying to play in, you know, girl sports. And so, of course, this is a solution looking for a problem.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, this got passed.
Mm-hmm.
because the GOP did not give a shit.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Now, moving on to get that taste out of our mouth, now we got our heroes of the week. And our first hero of the week is the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau. He introduced this week legislation into the Canadian Parliament to put a freeze on importing, buying, or selling handguns. Now, for those of you who don't know, Canada has this huge problem with illegal firearms being smuggled over the border from the U.S. into Canada.
Yeah.
This particular piece of legislation has actually been sort of in the works since at least since I think as far back as 2019. So they've been working on this for a few years now. I think what happened was a lot of people want to think that this was like a complete, like sort of a action on what happened, of course, in Uvalde, Texas. More than likely, it was partly a coincidence, but it probably also helps, you know, push it over the line, too.
Yeah.
Remind people, in Canada, they have never had or never believed the idea that their citizens have a right to bear arms. So, you know, most Canadians are pretty, you know, indifferent to this, more or less.
Yeah, and then there are those that have been brainwashed by Fox News and the Republicans here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And yeah, they, Trudeau is saying we are capping the number of handguns in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It will be illegal to buy, sell, transfer, or import handguns anywhere in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They already have plans to ban 1,500 types of military-style firearms.
Mm-hmm.
Offer a mandatory buyback program that will begin at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it already expanded background checks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this comes in the wake of Uvalde shooting and Buffalo shootings.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as Bill Blair, Minister of Emergency Preparedness, said Canada is very different from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada, gun ownership is not a privilege, not a right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a principle that differentiates ourselves from many other countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are colleagues and friends to the south.
Mm-hmm.
Canada, guns are only intended to be used for hunting and sport purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's good news for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, our amendment doesn't necessarily mean that you have the right to guns, either.
Mm-hmm.
Found that Corinthian had falsified its public job placement rates and misled prospective students about their ability to transfer credits and that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
which led to people with huge debts and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think this is the biggest forgiveness they've had for a specific school or company's line of, you know, federal student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Impact about 560,000 borrowers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that is great news.
Mm.
Kind of keep chipping away at that as they're still talking about the $10,000 forgiveness thing, which seems like it'll be happening at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got people that are mad because, you know, it's not enough, and it's like, you got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And like that would, I think the numbers are like, that would affect 97% of people
mm-hmm.
with loans and like wipe out a third.
Mm-hmm.
Of them, you know, whatever they have left, which is a huge number right there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's good news.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they keep going.
Yeah. All right. And let's see. Also, as you know, the gun reform thing is now picking up steam. President Biden himself has called for a new assault weapons ban, among other gun control options. For those who don't know, here in the U.S., we actually had an assault weapons ban for several years, and then it expired in,
I think, Bush's second term?
Yeah.
04.
Like 04, yeah. And we've seen what that resulted in.
Yeah, there are charts of, like, here's how the mass shootings were before that ban ended and how they were afterwards, and you can see where it changed rapidly.
Yeah.
Especially as the culture around that stuff rapidly changed.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the culture around that stuff had been going very toxic, at least since the late 80s. But, yeah, by that point... Yeah,
well, having
yeah.
like a federal ban that's, you know, markedly limited how
mm-hmm.
things could happen, and then letting that expire because, you know, that's Bush for you.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so some of these other gun conventions he was talking about.
Yeah, he's talking about things like raising the age to be able to buy
mm-hmm.
an assault weapon from 18 to 21.
Mm-hmm.
Called for a ban on high-capacity magazines, obviously background checks and red flag laws, and a repeal of the immunity that protects gun manufacturers from legal liability mm-hmm. if their weapons are used in violence.
Mm.
And this was the day after the 233rd mass shooting in the U.S. had taken place in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the week after, you know, the Uvalde shooting, 2 weeks after the Buffalo shooting, all that kind of stuff. He cited a recent report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Center. The guns were the leading cause of death among children now. Yeah, over the past two decades, more school-aged children have died from guns than on-duty police officers and active-duty military combined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been the number one cause of police officer death in the last 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Not shootings or anything. It's COVID, and it's a big margin over everything else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where all that stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we get something. It seems like there is some bipartisan support to
yeah.
work on a deal in the Senate. It's not necessarily going to be what makes people happy, but might be like red flag laws. And
yeah, the big one seems to be that they're agreeing on raising the age limit that it takes to buy a semi-automatic rifle from yeah. like 18 to 21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's the whole thing, I think, in one of the committees where Democrats were talking about how the Republicans had no hearts, and Lou Gohmert, I think it was the one yeah. that was responding, like, how could you say that?
I'm like, because you don't. I mean, like,
look at your actions.
Yeah, look at the way you're acting right now.
Yeah.
You know, because he certainly doesn't have any brains.
But, yeah.
And like I said, you know, the age limit, well, New York is going to be the first state to raise it, to raise or purchase a semi-automatic rifle from 18 to 21 years.
Yep. Good way to respond to that whole thing. Because, yeah, if you've looked at a lot of the shooters in a lot of the big mass shootings,
mm-hmm.
20 years old.
Yeah. There are usually 18 to 20. Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm.
Not to say there aren't other ages or whatever, but it's like a lot of these are people that are barely adults
mm-hmm.
that are letting their, you know, undeveloped emotions to take over and just do awful things
because
mm. they don't have the ability to even have, you know, anything that would cause a red flag and a background check or anything.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. This one in New York, I believe it's going to pass their Senate along mm-hmm. party lines, 43 to 20.
Yeah.
The Assembly 102 to 47.
Mm-hmm.
We had to Kathy Hochul's desk
mm-hmm.
for her signature.
Yeah, she will almost certainly sign it as soon as it shows up. So, it's more or less a done deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, all right, so moving on from there, we're moving on to the proper show proper. And the first story of the proper show proper is that the White House will, for the first time ever in its history, in its intern program, will actually start paying its interns starting this fall. So, probably sometime in late September, I guess.
Yeah, sometime this fall, as they said. Mm-hmm. Interns are expected to work a minimum of 35 hours per week.
Yeah.
Make it the maximum hourly rate of $21.42.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad somebody's paying them, because DC can be an expensive town to live in.
Yeah, especially when you're doing a lot of work for, you know, the people you're working for.
Yeah.
Yeah, these participating interns will be paid about $750 per week.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that'll help out a lot. Obviously, mm-hmm. get a lot out of it as far as experience and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that has gone out of vogue in the last, like, decade of being able to exploit interns like that.
Yeah. Well, it's also let's be completely honest. It's also because the cost of living has basically skyrocketed over yeah. the last 20 years or so. And especially in D.C., because a lot of people, when they think of the District of Columbia, they just think, you know, the Capitol building and, you know, the monuments and all that. But there's a whole city within that territory, and they are, not only a lot of them are fairly impoverished, but they're also pretty much completely unrepresented in our government.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah. Now, our next story, Michael Avenatti. There's probably a name you haven't heard in a while. You'll probably remember that he was trying to get a case against the former president when the news broke out that he had paid Stormy Daniels, an adult film actress, to have sex with him and then paid her off. Then it turned out that Avenatti himself was an incredible crook, and he basically stole a good chunk of Stormy Daniels' book money, and now he's going to go to 4 years for it in prison.
Yeah, the reason you haven't heard of him of late is because he's been in prison.
Yep.
Serving crimes for trying to defraud, I think, Nike?
Yep.
Yeah, he was trying to extort Nike, convicted in 2020 of threatening to ruin the shoemaker's reputation. Mm-hmm. If he did not pay him up to $25 million.
Yep.
It's like, if you're going to extort, you know, a corporation,
mm-hmm.
you're fucking up big time already.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you don't have any power to yourself, which his power at that time was like, I'm fighting the president.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the Trump's people, you know, could make tons of money off of his presidency because they had the power, him and his DOJ, that did not give a shit about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's going to spend another 2.5 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the 2.5 years he's already serving after another fraud conviction. So at least that sentence is fairly light for whatever he's probably getting from the Nike thing.
Mm-hmm.
Cause he's just been in prison already for the entire process for this.
Yeah, pretty much.
So he gets a little bit of a reprieve there, but it's not much of one.
Yeah, not really.
Because he's going to be in prison for a while still. Mm,
yeah, so going from a name we haven't heard about in a while to a name we honestly kind of wish we could stop hearing about altogether, Elon Musk. Has said that he has a, quote, super bad feeling about the economy, and he wants Tesla to lay off about 10,000 employees.
Yep. Doing this as an email instead of a meeting, which seems like the way that should go.
Yeah, wow, classy.
As much as, you know, people complain about meetings at their jobs, they're like, this should have been an email.
Yeah.
And this is the reverse of that.
Mm-hmm.
When your CEO is trying to, you know, recommend big changes and can't even do it to their face.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote this email reportedly titled, Pause All Hiring Worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Said that they need to cut their staff by about 10,000 or 10%,
mm-hmm.
Which would be about 10,000 people since they have about 100,000 employees.
Mm.
The stock market's in a weird place, mostly because a lot of it is that companies are, you know, trying to exploit the situation for as much money as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Raising prices and all that kind of stuff and just get as much money as they can right now.
Yep.
Which, yeah, obviously, this got to one of the president's media sessions, and he was asked about it. And, you know, he started listing off, you know, the good things that are happening with the economy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And ended with, you know, saying, you know, lots of luck on his trip to the moon. Making fun of the whole crypto shit that he talks about all the time, you know, going to the moon, that kind of thing, which he obviously responded with a NASA article about how SpaceX is working on a program to go to the moon.
Yeah.
Just like, fuck off, you idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's glowing proof that you don't have to be smart to be a rich person.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is incredibly stupid.
Hmm. Yeah. Next up, into slightly less serious stories. Some guy in disguise went into the Louvre in France and threw a cake at the Mona Lisa for some reason. For some reason, the Mona Lisa is a target of, like, a lot of vandalism. I guess it's just because it's, you know, super
famous. It's kind of a sign of the elite.
I guess.
But,
I mean,
yeah,
it's a really good famous painting by, you know, Da Vinci, so it...
Yeah. Yeah, this guy went through a lot. He was in disguise as an old woman in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Then got up to the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
And, like, was probably not thinking that this thing would be protected with some glass around it.
Yeah, which it is. That thing's been, for those who don't know, that thing actually got stolen back in the 1960s. There was, like, this multinational, like, attempt to get it back. And when they did get it back, they basically, the Louvre has done everything it can to keep protected somehow. And, yeah, the Mona Lisa is locked behind a glass case. So
yeah, so he was just kind of smudging cake on it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason that this was the whole thing. But yeah, the apparent reason he did this is some sort of climate change protest. Made a video on social media.
Yeah.
Showing that him saying things in French like, think of the earth. There are people who are destroying the earth. Think about it. Artists tell you, think of the earth. That's why I did this.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, okay, I don't know why this is the means for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, there was that story of the man who set himself on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the news articles out there refused to acknowledge the reason that he did it, which was to protest the inaction on climate change.
Yeah.
So I see why there are people that are doing anything they can to bring eyeballs to that topic.
Yeah.
This is maybe not the great idea here.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to some sports news. LeBron James is the first active NBA player in its history to have a net worth of $1 billion. Now, let's be kind of clear, that's partly because of inflation.
But he's also done a lot of work with
You
know, media companies and all this kind of stuff that he's...
Yes, he's a very savvy businessman.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, Jordan couldn't pull that off. Shaq couldn't pull that off when he was still in his career. Definitely good for him. He earned it. He works hard.
Yep. This will give people one more reason to hate him for...
Oh, yeah.
Randomly, though... Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's also net worth, not necessarily how much money he has on hand.
Mm-hmm. That is a difference. There is a difference between the two. Although, you know, after it gets to a certain point, the difference is besides the point, honestly. But that's another discussion. The DeLorean is returning as an electric car. Now, obviously, the DeLorean was one of those symbols of the 1980s. It's not a bad car by any stretch of the imagination. I will say that the original model, it didn't really have a whole lot of power behind the engine. And of course, as a lot of people know, that company basically fell through after John DeLorean, the founder, ended up... It's commonly thought that he, like, got into drug trafficking to try and help save the company. It actually was... not something he did on purpose. Apparently, he got into business with someone, one of his financiers, who also happened to have a drug smuggling business on the side that he didn't know about, that ultimately killed the company. But, yeah, the DeLorean's coming back, and it's going to be an electric car. Please tell me Elon Musk isn't involved in this.
No. But yeah, the DeLorean is kind of one of those weird infamous cars, despite it being known for because of Back to the Future.
Yeah, and also it was just, it's also known just because of its overall design too. Like the bird wing doors in particular.
Yeah. But yeah, the company ran out of business well before the movie even came out.
Yep. I don't think they only made like a relatively small amount of them that came off the factory. So yeah,
they made 9,000 of them.
Yep.
And so if you try to buy Ireland factory.
Yep. And if you try to buy an original one, an OG one, they are very expensive. Yeah. And that's if you manage to find one whole. There's like a whole other business of people buying parts, trying to restore one on their own. And those parts cost a hell of a lot on their own too.
Yeah, because it went out of business so fast, there was no real back-end support for repairs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so there most of that car, you cannot change out the parts with something else. It's pretty much everything in that car's machinery was specifically made by the company for that one model.
Yeah, and the history of this is pretty interesting, because it's all centered around a man named Stephen Wynn, who was a Liverpool-born mechanic who moved to the U.S. and opened a repair shop that was focusing on British and French automobiles, but then began to focus exclusively on DeLoreans when no one else wanted to. Saw that kind of as a potential business opportunity, though that's kind of a weird one for a line of cars that was only like 9,000 deep. But yeah, he by the mid-90s, he acquired the rights to the brand and the inventory of the DeLorean Motor Company, of which he became the CEO. The current company is based near Houston in Humble, Texas, with additional locations in Florida, Illinois, and California. And yeah, they've hinted at potentially doing other stuff over the years. For example, they announced plans for an electric vehicle in 2011 and 2016, so they were reproduced hundreds of the original DeLorean following the passage of a Federal Transportation Act, allowing car makers to build a small number of replicas. But yeah, that's leading to the recent announcement that they were doing an electric DeLorean that is called the Alpha 5. But yeah, saying that the current CEO is Juice DeVries. And they plan to hire up to 450 people over the next several years to start building these, as they just announced it. And it looks pretty cool, like a very much a modern version of the DeLorean. A little less kind of, boxy, more angular kind of look to it that was popular at that time. Yeah, they're saying specifications for this base model includes a range of more than 300 miles and a top speed of 155 miles per hour.
So it's definitely got more power than the original model did.
Yeah. Price is expected to be in the range of $175,000. So definitely not going to be a big thing, especially because the original one was only like $25,000.
Yep.
Which was expensive for the time, but yeah, this is a whole other thing. That's more expensive than the electric Hummer, I believe.
Yeah. That
was like $110,000.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine they're probably not expecting to make like tens of thousands of these. They're probably making a few hundred at least.
Yeah.
Basis of probably selling what they reservations and then fulfilling those and kind of keeping it to that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's happening. Next up in some science news, NASA released an audio clip of what a black hole might sound like, and it sounds exactly what you think it would. Nightmarish and terrifying.
Yeah. They kind of generated this, not really on any sort of recent data. It's been sitting around for about 20 years that was gathered by the Chandra X-ray Observatory. But the... yeah, using electromagnetic data picked up from the Perseus Galaxy Cluster. About 240 million light years away. And yeah, they said it was a more recent decision as part of NASA's effort over the past 2 years to translate its stunning space photography into something that could be appreciated by the year. And yeah, so they... while the Perseus audio tries to replicate what a black hole actually sounds like, there are other sonifications are more or less creative renditions of images, and those imaginative interpretations, each type of material, gaseous cloud or star, gets a different sound. Elements near the top of images sound higher in tone, brighter spots are louder, that kind of thing. But yeah, this, you can read this if you want to learn a little more, as well as just watch and listen to the whole thing. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. And now for the entertainment portion of the show, we move on to our first entertainment story, once again proving that Star Wars fans are among the absolute worst, because the Star Wars people have had to call out racism against Moses Ingram in Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's the worst fandom. Like, I mean, there's a lot of bad fandoms out there, but Star Wars is the worst of all of them.
Yeah, it's not great, especially, but it's good that Star Wars is finally starting to speak up about this stuff, because they didn't really do it so much with Finn and Rose when those two characters are revealed in the more recent Star Wars movies.
Yep.
That kind of thing. But those people kind of twist in the wind with that stuff, but yeah, even had Ewan McGregor do a video from his car for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why he couldn't just do it in his house or something. Versus that kind of thing. But basically telling people, like, stop being fucking racist, you assholes. And if you're going to keep doing this shit, then get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And Star Wars had a whole weird thing of, like, saying, let's see, there are more than 20 million sentient species in the Star Wars galaxy. Don't choose to be a racist.
Yeah.
He's like, sure, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to frame it in the context of Star Wars is just weird.
Mm-hmm.
Versus just a human thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she had posted on her Instagram, I believe, screenshots of some of the racist messages she'd been getting.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a... tell those people to go fuck off.
Yeah.
And I've seen plenty of people are like, oh, it's the writing we have an issue with, not her.
Yeah, no, that's not the problem.
And people are like, what about Gina Carano?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, she suffered the consequences of her stupid shit she's been doing for years.
Yeah.
It's not because of some sexism there.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a little bit of that, but most of it was because she was a shitty person.
Mm-hmm.
There's comments here at the bottom of this article, poor acting is poor acting, regardless of color. It's like, fuck off. Don't put your criticism of the series into this thing about racism.
Yeah. Then we got some more Disney-related stuff. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It will be hitting Disney Plus on June 22nd.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So you haven't had a chance to go into the theaters to see it. It'll be out pretty soon here.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks. Which is pretty fast, a month and a half since it launched in May 6th.
Yeah. Moving on from there. We also got a teaser trailer for the live action Pinocchio for Disney Plus. And once again, we're getting yet another one of those, live action remakes of a Disney classic. And I don't know why. I will say I think this version actually, at least in this one, Pinocchio actually looks like Pinocchio. But yeah. I don't know why. I guess because it makes money for them.
Yeah.
Because all these remakes are just, most of them, they're mediocre at best, and if not, they're subpar.
Yeah. But also you have both the animated and the live-action versions on Disney Plus, so you can watch both.
Yeah.
And this will be Disney Plus exclusive on September 8th.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm curious to see if they are going to have some of the horrors are in that original animated movie.
Oh yes. That movie was to be honest, it was already based on a children's book that was pretty terrifying in and of itself. But
yeah,
that movie was pretty terrifying for little kids in the day. Especially the whole thing with the kids turning into donkeys to be worked to death in a salt mine.
Yeah, is Honest John the one that tries to corrupt Pinocchio?
Honest John is the fox guy and that weird little dude that's like his assistant. He's the guy who corrupts it, and then he convinces him to go to Pleasure Island. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's played by Keegan-Michael Key.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, new character is Sophia the Seagull.
Mm-hmm.
That they specifically call out here.
Yeah. Which
is weird. Let's see. Yeah, there's Signor Stromboli.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Giuseppe Battiston.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in here? Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Jiminy Cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Tom Hanks is Geppetto.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to do a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
Though he's only going to be in the movie if it's like the other for like 15 to 20 minutes at most.
Yeah.
Beginning and the end. I'd be curious to see how fucked up this gets.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do see the boat, I think, here that takes them to the island where they get turned into donkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And finally, last story for the night, we got a trailer for Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe, which I'm guessing is more or less supposed to be the sequel to Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Something like that, I guess.
Yeah. I am somehow surprised that these two characters have managed to still exist.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think they kind of wore out their welcome by the time of the late 90s, to be completely honest. And also, like, their whole era is just it's that Gen X era that was, you know, just they're very much a relic of Generation X and that whole era of MTV.
Yeah. Though this one seems to have a weird whole thing, the description here, in perhaps the dumbest space movie ever made. Beavis and Butthead are sentenced to space camp by a creative judge in 1998.
Yeah.
Leading to a trip on the space shuttle with predictably disastrous results.
Oh, so they're actually going period piece. All right.
Well, after going through a black hole, they reemerge in our time, where they look for love, misuse iPhones, and are hunted by the deep state. Spoiler, they don't score.
Yeah.
So I think this is setting up the new series that Mike Judge has been working on.
Yeah.
Because I think he's tweeted about this saying, yeah, there'll be new episodes coming soon, and then the old stuff will be coming to Paramount Plus as well.
Okay, that's actually kind of funny.
And this will be out June 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Just for Paramount Plus. So
yeah. I hope this doesn't turn into one of those, like, yeah, the kids are all SGWs now, and all that bullshit. But then again, I think a lot of people realize that original show is that Beavis and Butthead are supposed to be laughed at.
Yeah, there's bits in here of them, one of them holding up a phone to, like, take a picture for these people that are doing things like, this TV show is boring. There's just people standing here.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to be too stupid to get into any any commentary that isn't just they're stupid as hell and find themselves in the dumbest situations possible.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, then. We got ourselves a show, folks. I do believe we do. We got ourselves a show. Okay, so I would like to remind our users, if you've got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got links for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or really any type of podcast aggregator you can think of. And God, there are a lot out there now, aren't they? So yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. As always, our thoughts are still with the people of Ukraine and with the people of Russia. And also, even though we seem to be on the downward trend of the pandemic, we still encourage anyone who has yet to be vaccinated to get vaccinated. And if you believe that you may need a booster, if you're already vaccinated and think that's something you might need, do not hesitate. They are free, and they're very easy to get right now. So we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. Join us next week, and we'll have a bunch more insanity to talk about. Hopefully more good than bad, but, well, it's better to go through life so you're not disappointed. See y'all next week. Good night, everybody.